Main Street to Wall Street, global business celebrity and former Fortune 100 C-suite executive Jeffrey Haislett takes you inside the good, the bad, and the ugly of businesses today. Saddle up. It's time for All Business with Jeffrey Haislett.
Today, we're diving deep into the world of leadership, innovation, and the future of education with none other than James Keyes. As the former CEO of both 7-Eleven and Blockbuster, James knows a thing or two about navigating the ever-changing landscape of business. He's also the author of the groundbreaking book, Education is Freedom, The Future is in Your Hands, shedding light on the transformative power of education in shaping our world. Get ready for a conversation that will challenge your thinking and inspire action. James, welcome to All Business with Jeffrey Haislett.
Jeffrey, thanks. Great to be with you.
I got to ask you, which is your favorite, Blockbuster or 7-Eleven?
You know, they're like children. You can't really have a favorite.
There's got to be one, though. I mean, do you like Slurpees better or movies? Which is it?
You know, but they were both a lot of fun. And I've got to say that the innovation opportunity at 7-Eleven every day was coming up with a new product, a new way to satisfy the customers. And Blockbuster was a completely different challenge. Yeah. So it was, both of them were fun. I think I learned more probably in 5 or 6 years in Blockbuster than I did in 20 years at 7-Eleven because of the challenges that we faced.
Well, I remember meeting you back then, and you and I were talking about doing business because our business was in decline at Kodak, and we were thinking about what could we do with kiosk and something different. What made you step on and take these really challenging roles?
Well, the first was, you know, I wish I could say I grew up wanting to be a retailer. So I dreamed of selling soap or something. No, I pursued as much education as I could, and I followed that path toward opportunity, actually beginning in the oil and gas industry, working at Gulf Oil for the first step of my career. But 7-Eleven, I ended up getting to because of the petroleum business. They had acquired a company called Citgo Petroleum. They were now selling gasoline at all their stores and needed a supply. So it was a great opportunity for me to be introduced to retail. Ended up having a fascinating career there, but I discovered the power of technology to transform a company. And I discovered the importance of adapting to change at 7-Eleven. After a successful career, 21 years, a great run as CEO, where we increased the shareholder value by 10 times, I had an opportunity now to step back and say, what's next? Blockbuster represented a great opportunity to take all of those tools that I had developed at 7-Eleven and especially knowledge of the transformative power of technology. I thought, well, let's give this a shot. What I didn't know is the world was about to collapse in 2008.
Well, you had that, which is a big headwind to be able to head into, which I know as well, because we were leading a transformation at Kodak at the time, and then 2008 hit, and it was like, this is over. It's not going to work in the future. What did you find out about customer behavior, the changing nature of that behavior? How much of an effect it had on your business?
It wasn't really customer behavior as much as it is the perception of customer behavior that can affect you. And that's an important lesson for all companies. There are so many lessons, business lessons, wrapped up in the Blockbuster story that people don't realize. But perception was really the biggest challenge at Blockbuster. We all knew that people would be streaming. That was clear. It was just really a question of how soon Wi-Fi capabilities would be strong enough and how soon devices would have easy access. So this is the day before apps. Yeah. The iPhone was invented in 07, right? Yeah. And so it was very difficult to get that streaming effectively to consumers. So did the consumers want it? Yes. Did they know what they want? Not really. Did the street perceive that it was going to happen much, much faster? Yes. Yeah. And that was what made it such a challenge in the face of a financial crisis to refinance debt when your name is Blockbuster and everyone said, well, it's all going to be streaming in no time at all.
I know when I'm sitting there sometimes and I'll see the name Kodak pop up on something when they're talking about they failed to see the innovation, which we were all about innovation, right? You know, how does that make you feel when you see people, you know, like you know, armchair quarterback from behind.
It can be annoying. Yeah. You know, the reality is that people are going to leap to the easiest answer.
Yeah.
So technology killed Blockbuster. Yeah. There's a famous line out there that Blockbuster turned down an opportunity to acquire Netflix for $50 million. Now, what people forget is that that happened in the year 2000. Well, you could have also bought Google stock for like 10 bucks a share or something.
Yeah. Bitcoin wasn't even around.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. But inside the story of both Kodak and Blockbuster are some fascinating learnings that if people took the time to dig in, the big story with Blockbuster wasn't streaming and the advent of Netflix and others. The big story at Blockbuster was managing cash flow, and especially managing cash flow during a turbulent economic time where interest rates were doubling and tripling, particularly relevant in today's marketplace.
Especially with retail. When you're seeing these retail stores close and close, many of them going bankrupt, it's about managing those assets that are still good assets, but not the way they used to be. How did you inspire, you know, an innovation of culture in terms of innovation for your team?
I stumbled on three things that I tried to emphasize constantly within both 7-Eleven and Blockbuster. In fact, those three things are the foundation of my book. I learned over the years that these three things are critically important. Change, adapting to change, right? Having the confidence to do something about it, because people don't like change. They tend to resist it and fear creeps in. And then clarity of inbound communications, so listening, and outbound communications, being able to share with the team the importance of the strategy and get it down into simple terms so that they can understand it. I speak about change, or these three things, change, confidence, and clarity, quite often, and I try to impart that to the team, that was the essence of being able to adapt a company. It's those three things, particularly the change piece. In fact, I've coined the expression CEO, we all know, stands for Chief Executive Officer. But the role of the Chief Executive Officer is something I said, change equals opportunity. Also CEO, change equals opportunity. Because all of commerce, if you think about it, starts and ends, well or badly, based on your ability to respond to change.
I tell you what, speaking of change, we're going to take a change right now and take a break and come right back after this message.
C-Suite Radio.
And we are back with All Business with Jeff Rasit right here on C-Suite Radio and C-Suite TV. I'm talking to James Key, the former CEO of 7-Eleven and Blockbuster. And James, right before the break, we were talking about CEOs. Now, in companies, one of the things I know is we always have people who are resistant to change. I call them captains or champions of no. Did you encounter those in the business?
Oh, constantly. And it starts in fear. There's a fear and an inertia tends to creep into all companies. The bigger the company, the bigger the risk of that fear permeating the organization. I call it big company disease, unfortunately. And it's just a reality. You have to deal with it. Jack Welch was very aggressive, and if you remember his style of management.
He would just lop off the bottom 20 every time, or 30. I can't remember what percentage, but he every year just take them and move them out.
Exactly. And the way he characterizes it, he's doing them a favor because they were wound up in fear or resistance or whatever, and they weren't going to progress within GE. So he was pretty harsh in his decision. But you have to be able to cull that negative attitude. Now, there's two ways to do it, though. You can respond with fear. Mm-hmm. And a lot of leaders do that. It's the lowest common denominator.
Right.
It's really easy to motivate people with fear.
Easiest one to do.
It is. Yeah. I mean, you see it in, unfortunately, in society a lot. In politics.
Especially in politics right now.
Exactly. Fear works, right? But there's also a lever called hope.
Yeah.
And in order to use the hope lever, you have to inspire. You have to have those three things, the ability to embrace change, the confidence to deliver a strategy, and the clarity to be able to share with your organization, this is why this will work. Follow me.
Yeah.
And if you have those things, you can create hope in an organization And that, I think, is even more effective than Jack Welch's method of lopping off the bottom 10 or 20%, because you want to inspire people to move forward and to fight that constant inertia that holds companies back.
You know, I always write about change, adapt, or die, which you seem to have as part of your theme. But the key thing I like about that is the hope you can give to others, the direction, where we're going to go, you know, to inspire them to get there. What advice would you give, based on what you learned at 7-Eleven, what you learned at Blockbuster, to CEOs? Because a lot of these businesses are going through some of those changes right now. You know, COVID didn't cause it, but certainly accelerated the pace at which we're having to deal with things. What advice would you give to a CEO right now?
Probably the most important thing is to keep your basic learning techniques alive. Critical thinking is critically important. I was surprised at what I learned from my Japanese partners at 7-Eleven. They had adopted something that Edward Deming taught the Japanese back in World War II, and that we learned in school as the scientific method, if you think. They simplified it down to plan, do, see. Mm-hmm. So come up with a hypothesis, put an action in place, and then measure the results, and then modify it. Yeah. And it's that's sort of the heart of the Japanese Kaizen, constant improvement, is this basic scientific method that we all learned in grade school about this constant process of evaluating change and being able to respond to it. That's a fundamental skill that CEOs have to have to be able to adapt and to use data, which is plentiful today in our information age. We have ready access to data to be able to validate and test the hypothesis and constantly improve on it.
Yeah. So when you talk about data, what was the data that you looked at every day? When I used to interview folks at Dunkin' Donuts, they get up every morning, look at the weather, you know, they're well ahead of everybody else. They're on the same schedule as their franchisees. What data are you looking at?
Well, at 7-Eleven, it was shocking how little data we had. We had old cash registers that were
the old Z-outs. Yeah. Remember those?
Yeah, exactly. They were all manual. Nothing was linked. Yeah. We had no database. And all of a sudden, we saw our Japanese licensee using data to know what SKU, what individual item sold out at what time of day, so that they could never be out of stock. And it fed a just-in-time delivery system. It's a beautiful thing. When we applied that data to the United States, to our stores here, we were shocked to find that we were out of stock on the best sellers probably 20 or 30% of the time.
Yikes.
Oh, yeah. And that's devastating for a retailer. And we were able to find that half of the store didn't sell a thing in a month. And this is a convenience operation where you're there for the things people need every day. And so we were able to use that data to constantly evolve the product assortment and literally tailor the assortment to the convenience needs of every individual store, not just a city, because the needs in one neighborhood, literally across the street, might be different from the needs of that store. And so we could tailor the product assortment down to the individual item with the use of data.
But still being similar in terms of you if you're driving across the country, I know I'm walking to this 7-Eleven or this one on different parts of the country, I can expect somewhat the same thing, right?
Oh, yeah. You're going to find a Slurpee in every store.
Hey, there you go. There you go. Hey, now, you mentioned learning, and I think that's a key thing for us to think about, and, of course, your book's about that. What made you write the book?
I was the classic case of a kid who wasn't expected to do much in life because I grew up pretty much dirt poor.
I'm in that club. We're both in that club.
Well, you know how it goes. You know, the people around you say, well, you'll never be able to afford college, so get ready. You're going to go to work at the factory your dad worked at or whatever. And I found, thankfully, through a combination of mentors, my parents telling me they didn't want their life for me, that they encouraged me to strive for more. And I found that the more I would learn, the more I could do. And I learned that at a very early age. And I stayed with it. And then, interestingly, graduating from school, you have a tendency to think, okay, I'm done. Yeah. I've got a college degree. I've now got a master's degree. I'm done learning. Well, what I realized then is that my learning had just begun.
Yeah.
I had basically a license to learn, and particularly in the role of a chief executive or in any role in a corporation, you've got to keep learning to be able to continue to improve and expand on your opportunities.
I'm learning more today than I was back in college or in high school, certainly. But I'm learning more at a faster pace, and it's a deeper learning. Are you finding that too?
I am, and one of the huge advantages, I wish I could live another 100 years. Yeah. Because when we grew up, our sources of information were public libraries.
Microfilm.
Right, microfilm. Remember that? Hey, kids,
if you're watching right now, microfilm. We used to go into a library and pull up articles on microfilm.
This was horrible.
Was a bad version of the internet.
Oh, that was technology at the time. You had this little, like little negative things, and you'd slide them in a machine and read.
Library cards.
It's crazy.
You guys don't even know what that is. All right, yeah. There you go. Little index cards that we go find the books, and anyway, I don't even want to go there.
But dial forward. Think about today. And the power of that young people have in the palm of their hand is literally, I call it a portal to unlimited learning.
Yeah.
Because you can now, free of charge, learn any kind of math through Khan Academy.
And we're adapting. I mean, I'm constantly myself always going to, you talk about education is freedom, freedom education, freedom of learning. Talk to me. And by the way, congratulations on a bestseller, because that's not an easy thing to do.
Having done that,
there's only so many books that make that. So congratulations on that. But talk to me more about education is freedom.
I see so many people on the hamster wheel thinking that I've got to get a degree or I've just got to go get a job because I want to make as much money as I can. And yet, if you step back and you look at all of our friends who made a lot of money, who did well, there's not a direct correlation between having a lot of money and happiness.
Yeah.
A lot of the richest friends I have, not so happy.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it doesn't hurt.
Right. Well, it doesn't hurt. It's an enabler. It definitely helps. But it's not the ultimate answer. The ultimate answer is we want all of us to have the freedom to do those things in life that truly do make us happy. And the more you learn, the more opportunities you can have to do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
So it, literally, this applies to any age. So as I see friends get older, I encourage them, have you thought about learning something new? Have you tried painting and taking on a new learning experience to enrich your life? If you're going to travel to a foreign country, if you learn the language of that just a little bit, and the devices are there today online to be able to learn through Babbel or any of these other sources, a little bit of French, your experience in France will be so much more enriched with that little bit of knowledge of the language you have because you'll better understand and they'll be more open to you to share their culture with you.
Speaking of learning, we're going to take a quick break and learn more about our offers from our sponsors. We'll be right back after this message from C-Suite Radio and C-Suite TV.
C-Suite Radio.
Okay, we are back right here on All Business with Jeffrey Hazen on C-Suite TV and C-Suite Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm talking with James Keyes, the CEO, former CEO of 7-Eleven and of Blockbuster Video, a titan in the business industry. And of course, we're talking about your brand new book, and it's all about education is freedom. Now, in the book, you talk about something called the C-Suite of Learning. Now, I'm all about the C-Suite, so... Talk to me, what's the C-Suite of Learning all about?
Yeah, I didn't steal it from you,
no,
I promise.
It's good. Hey, we love it. We love it when people compliment us in any way, shape, or form. So by all means.
Well, I was struggling with, after many, many years of leading companies and mentoring young people, how to put these ideas into a context that made sense. And what I stumbled on is I came up with 9 C's. Mm-hmm. And it's basically the what, the how, and the why of learning, which is important for any age, whether it's in your academic experience, your journey, or your business journey. Those 3 elements, what to learn, how to learn, and why to learn, I thought were critically important. But frankly, I was having trouble. I had a chapter on each, and I was having trouble pulling them together. And I said, you know, what we'll do is we'll call these our C-suite learnings, because these are the meta skills that you develop over an entire career, the soft skills, if you will. I've been calling them meta skills because it's much more technical.
Yeah, there you go.
So
that's
it sounds
good.
So much better.
Yeah, it's
right?
Hip. It's hip.
But these are the skills like adapting to change, like confidence, like clarity, like critical thinking or creativity, something as simple as creativity, that Einstein called intelligence having fun, curiosity, the basic element of learning, and finally the character and the cultural literacy that you need to survive in the global environment that we work in. All of these things are, none of them are actually taught in school.
Yeah.
But they're things that you learn throughout a career. And if anyone would have come to us at 18 or 20 years old, or at 40 or at 50, and said, here are the things that will really help you perform and excel in your career, even in your life, frankly, those are the things that I packaged up as C-suite learnings to be able to share with everyone.
And that never stops. I can remember, as you're talking about this right now, I remember being in my C-suite when I was a head of my own company in my 20s, you know, made my first million by the time I think I was 24, 25. But yet, when I was doing that, I was learning all these things, but it just accelerated. And it wasn't until I was in my 40s and sitting in those big boardrooms, I'm going like, wow, this is an education. I mean, because I was getting it right there. What was the biggest takeaway that you ever had in the C-suite?
Oh my gosh, I had so many. I think the ability to inspire others was probably the most critical factor, because what I found is that fear does creep in.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to fight that inertia. Yet, the more I would try to inspire, in fact, if there was one thing that worked better than anything else, it was over-communicating.
Yeah.
So we have a tendency to say, well, you know, we don't want to tell everybody everything. Well, especially in a time of crisis, yeah, people want to know.
And you have to break it down.
You've got to break it down.
Here's why we're doing these things, right?
Einstein once said, if you can't explain it to a six-year-old, you don't understand it as well enough yourself. And it's so true. And especially in a time of crisis, people are on pins and needles. They think they're going to get fired. If you can break a problem, a challenge, into the simplest possible terms so that everyone can understand it, what knowledge does is it takes away fear. It's kind of like light. When you're scared of the dark, you turn on the light and you go, oh, okay, there's nothing here that's going to hurt me. And when you're in a crisis, in a business situation, knowledge and communications becomes that light that takes away fear and keeps people at their job instead of having their head down.
You know, one of the things I think is very inspiring about you, Jim, is that you're still active even after being a CEO, being in the C-suite, and you're doing a lot of really great work in terms of charitable activity. Tell me about one of the projects you've got going on right now.
I have a whole host of projects, but the primary thrust of my philanthropic work is to try to help young people see that education really is the key to unlocking unlimited opportunity. That if I could do it, and you, right?
Yeah, I say the same thing.
Right, anybody can do it, but many of us didn't have that guidance, didn't have anybody there to say, hey, kid, you can really do this.
Right.
So I spent a lot of time working on that, but I also feel that there's so much that you can get from helping others that it's a blessing to be able to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's been fascinating. The book is a bestseller. We're going to tell people where to get it again, and just congratulations on everything. It's great to have you right here on All Business with Jeffrey Hazel.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you. Hey, at the end of every show, I like to talk about what I learned. And let me tell you, with James Keyes, there's lots of lessons of both success and a little bit of failure, because in business today, you're always going to be failing. The key is to get to the wins. But most importantly, the biggest takeaway I had was the ever-evolving nature of education. We never stop learning. Now, a lot of times we think, hey, when we're done with college, it's all over, that's the end. But really, the education comes a little bit later in life, and a lot of it with hard knocks. That's what I learned right here on All Business with Jeffrey Hazlett on C-Suite Radio and C-Suite TV.
You're listening to All Business with Jeffrey Hazlett, brought to you by C-Suite Radio, a podcast network featuring today's top business experts and is part of the C-Suite Network, the world's most trusted network of C-Suite executives. Find this and other business podcasts on c-suiteradio.com. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.